This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
All right, you ready?
100%.
All right, my man. God damn it. I'm so glad you're here. Guys, Ben Camone is here. My man from Ben Camone Knives is here. And before we get to it, let's take care of a little bit of business. What do you say? First things first, Broadback Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a dynamite grinder. I love this thing. I love it. I cannot tell you enough good things about the Broadback Ironworks 2x72 grinder. The attachments, all the things, all the parts, all the attachments. And if you go to broadbackironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you can get 10% off all the parts, attachments, and all the plans. So definitely check out what's going on with them. And I appreciate your support. Those guys are great. Customer service is awesome. In terms of customer service, another great company is Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. Go check out your next oven at evenheat-hillen.com. I love working with these companies that I know the owners, and those are small businesses that have supplied great customer services and great products. And Even Heat and Broadbeck are terrific. Even Heat's great. The family's fantastic, and they're incredibly good in terms of their equipment, in terms of their options, in terms of their customer service. It's the best. If you want to get into hardening any kind of tools or knives or anything like that, definitely get yourself an Even Heat. Next are my friends at Nordic Edge in Australia. They are the makers of pro tools for knife makers. They make file guides and all sorts of parts, and they also have supplies and all the stuff you need to build your knives. They also have handle materials. They have steel. They also teach classes. You should definitely check out what's going on over there if you're in Australia at nordicedge.com.au. I love their Big Mert file guide. I love their file guides in general. I really love them. I've been using their file guide exclusively. It's got the screw-on carbides. It's really dynamite. So definitely check out what's going on over there. And I appreciate their support. So nordicedge.com.au. And if you're in Canada, go to Maritime Knife Supply. That's maritimeknifesupply.ca. I just ordered some belts from them. I support the companies that I do business with too. It's not just I'm getting freebies all the time. I really appreciate what Lawrence Lake is doing for the knife making community, and he's involved with the New England School of Metalwork. He's a knife maker too, so he knows what you need. And if you go to maritimeknifesupply.com, get yourself a pack of 10 pack of abrasive belts, you get 10% off. They have everything you need if you're in Australia or even if you're in the United States. Definitely check out. Everything's just as fast and it's really good. And he's constantly growing and building, and I appreciate his business, Maritime Knife Supply. Lawrence Lake is really dynamite. I also really appreciate Sam and Jeff over at Trojan Horse Forge. They're the makers of the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise. I believe they have a couple left for Christmas. So definitely check out them over at TrojanHorseForge.com. And if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you're going to get 10% off your Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise. That things are awesome. I've said it 100 times. Every one of my knives goes on to the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise twice. For the hand sanding deck is dynamite, and for carving, it turns all the way around and is really good. I definitely would suggest getting involved with the T4 Sentinel Oil and their handle press attachment that goes on to the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise. It's great. They have payment plans available, but I'm under the impression that they might have a couple ready to go for Santa. I'm with you. Next is my friends at Baker Forge and Tool. I just finished four shop knives made out of their Tsunami pattern copper mascus. This stuff is awesome. And let me tell you, when you buy from them, they're consistent. There's never delaminations. There's never problems. And if there were, I doubt there ever. I haven't been using it for a while. Never have a problem. Their customer service is dynamite too. So if you go to TrojanHorseForge.com, if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you can get 10% off all your copper mascus, bronze my, sand my, all their mosaic, Damascus, all the different things they make. And also get yourself some of that gator piss. That's their etchant. I don't have to keep talking about it, but that etchant is dynamite, and I've used it for their stuff. I've used it for Damascus. I've used it with Damasteel. It is really, really, really pretty amazing stuff. So go get yourself some of that. And if you're in the EU, go to DIYEurope.eu, and they have the gator piss too. So I'm with you. And I think Lawrence Lake has gator piss too. I think he has some of that Baker Forge too. So Maritime Knife Supply's got you covered too. He don't sleep. He got everything. Next are my friends at Total Boat, totalboat.com/fullblast. I'm with them. They make great stuff. Make it for boats. Make it for knives. Use it. I'm going to use it. I use it exclusively for all my handle scales, and I really appreciate it. I love it, and it's great stuff. So definitely check out totalboat.com/fullblast. I just finished a couple of Hoopla knives with the G.L. Hansen & Sons. That's the G. Carta, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure and heat. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini by Mikey, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm G. Carta, Pheasant by Mikey, Color Round by Mikey, Hoopla by Mikey. Amazing colors. And its stuff is awesome. And basically, he's making a giant loaf, and he's cut of different colors, put together with resins and fabrics, and then he cross cuts them, and then you end up getting this really beautiful cross cut, colorful micarta. But it's not a micarta, it's a G-carta. So definitely go over to gcarta.bigcartel.com and check out what that's all about. I want to thank my friends at Tormek. Tormek celebrating 50 years in business. It's awesome. They're making now the Black T8 sharpening system. It's a water-cooled sharpening system. Go to tormek.com to check it out, and it's at Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. I really, really, really love the Tormex, and they've changed the way I make knives. My knife making is much better thanks to Tormek, and it's great. So definitely check it out, Tormek. And last but not least, it's Friday. This is coming out Friday the 15th. This is your shot. This is your last chance. I know I'm saying it, but I'm saying it anyway. If you go to the Center for Metal Arts, they're offering a tong pre-sale. And it's closing now on the end of the day of the 15th, which is today, Friday the 15th. I can't say enough about what they're doing, but I'm going to read out what Pat said. If you know this place, if you know CMA and you've been taking classes here, you know about their philosophy about tongs and how important they are. Pat believes that the tongs are the backbone to all the forging processes and play a monumental part in the quality of the CMA forging classroom and educational programming. Pat's been researching the process of adding flat bit tong forging exercises to a power hammer curriculum, and during this process developed an amazing universal box jawed tong based on examples he found in his historic texts. Your support in purchasing tongs from CMA directly impacts the quality of the forging classroom and the research into American industrial forging in the historical shop restoration. Please visit centerformetalarts.org and pick up yourself a pair of tongs. The pre-order window is now. So my last thing to say about it is, if you want to get yourself a pair of dynamite tongs, whatever, or equipment in general, the tongs, now's your chance. And I'm also going to be teaching a couple friction folders classes. Get on the newsletter over the Center for Metal Arts. Get involved with them. I'm not teaching friction folders anywhere else. I'm not doing it. I'm not going anywhere else. I want you to go down to the Center for Metal Arts because it's important to me, and that's where it's at. So with that said, many thanks. If you got yourself a pair of them tongs, you're in business, and you're not only getting yourself a high quality pair of American-made tongs, but you're also supporting one of the great schools in the country. So I'm with you. I appreciate you, and I got a nice message from Pat, and he's very thankful too. So get on board. Hurry up. All right, guys. My good buddy Ben Camone is here. Ben Camone, Camone Knives, one of the best knife makers on the planet. I'm sorry. You are. You're on my list. You're on my Mount Rushmore. It's true. And I also love talking with you because you like to fuck around. You're very serious. Your work is very serious. But you have a very, shall we say, subversive side, which I appreciate. Ben Camone, how the hell are you?
I'm great. I mean, it's stressful. Kids are sick partly, and it's kind of a stressful time before Christmas, like with everybody, I guess. But other than that, I'm great.
Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
No.
I was going to say, is this time of year stressful for you business-wise, or?
That too, actually, because I have to, or I want to finish one batch before Christmas. And the problem is I'm asking for payment about 2 weeks ahead of time of finishing. Now, I'm on vacation for 2 weeks for Christmas and New Year's. My lazy ass just goes away for 2 weeks. So
yeah, nice.
But that means that I have to, you know, it's hard to calculate or estimate when the knives will be finished, and I have to ask for the payment 2 weeks in advance, just so every payment comes in, actually, because customers are demanding. Let's say it like that.
Are any of them like kind of hitting you up to try to get them ready for Christmas?
No. Demanding in the sense of they are not always on time and think, you know, when a company asks me to pay for something, I've paid yesterday. Yeah. I've paid before they ask me. Right. But that's just my crazy, over bureaucratic Austrian.
I don't think that's it, because I hate merch. It's the no story. And the reason why I hate merch is we used to be involved with, and now a lot of people can be involved. A lot of makers can find these companies that will not only make your shirts or your hats or whatever, but they'll also take the money and they'll also send them, which makes it easy because all of a sudden you don't have stuff on hand. And usually what'll happen is they'll say, oh, don't worry, you know, we can make one at a time and you don't have to deal with anything. And basically you can give them the image and then they make it and stuff like that. I don't do that because I feel very strongly about supporting local businesses and local economy. So I have a company that's down the street from me that I can walk into, shake the guy's hand. I know Greg for a long time. And are they my favorite shirts I've ever had made? No. But at the same time, I appreciate them and I appreciate small business. And I like the fact that I can get them. So what I do is I'll buy a load of things. And then when I come in to pick them up, I'll give them, I'll say, I'm ready to pay. And they're always surprised because I'm the only person who's ready to pay when I show up. Because I don't overdo it. And I say, here, let's and then they'll say, oh, you're going to use your credit card? Just send me a check. We know you. You always pay on time. I'd rather have a check because I don't have to pay the credit card fees. And I'm just like, you don't want the money now? And he's like, no. We know. You're the only person who pays on time. So I don't know. I don't think it's just you.
No. It's now. I didn't want to imply that. But I think, it's also for me, it's a self-protection thing to a high degree. Because I, you know, when I've paid, it's out of my mind and it's done with. Whereas when I'm lazy and maybe get, an email or a warning, I have forgotten payments. I mean, that happens.
Right.
And then it annoys you, you know. I get stressed out over those things. I want to avoid that, so I'm not paying on time, but even before that, I guess.
You know, we've got in American society, we've gotten so used to waiting and not rushing to pay and not budgeting ourselves and being disciplined and stuff like that. It's very common for Americans to be in debt, and I think that's almost like, it's encouraged by society too. And I think that we have this, like, and I remember being in the restaurant business. I mean, no one pays ever on time. And it's like, that's part of the culture of being like, you know, don't worry, they can wait. You know, they can wait and everyone can wait. And I found maybe it's just because living in New York and kind of working for flea bags and kind of dealing with people is there isn't this sense of just like, you know, you pay, you do your job, and then you get paid. And I feel very strongly about making sure that we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing. We budget ourselves in a specific way. This is meant to be paid, we pay it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of people like that.
I mean, you guys have a way different payment system overall, because I know, I don't have a credit card to this day. I have one now in the sense of a prepaid card, but that's just my normal bank card. In a sense, and you know, you are granted a prepaid credit card payment in the sense that it has to be covered on your account, but I can't go in debt with that. And I remember when I was a child, or even until now, in Austria, in Austria, I can only speak for Austria or my, you know, who I know, almost nobody has a credit card who doesn't go on to international vacation a lot. But other than that, you don't really need it in Austria or, I guess, Europe. But and checks weren't a thing either here.
Yeah.
Like, I know from the movies that in America everything is paid with check and credit card. That was never a thing here. That's so. I mean, it's a curious.
Well, fact, checks now. No one's really. I mean, I'm rarely dealing with checks. I mean, my business partner has checks. And when we started the business and we went to go open up a business account, my business partner was like, "We're not taking credit cards out. We're going to use your, all you're going to have is a debit card." And so the debit card is linked to the bank account, and everything I pay for is directly from the credit card. So I'm from the debit card. So there's never any like I'm never having the opportunity of going into any kind of credit for anything, which I'm really grateful for.
Similar to our system now, I guess. But I would say
it's you know the business is so different, and it's so for creative people, business is really hard. And the hard part is that creative people just assume, especially, let's say, knife makers or makers in general, they find something that they're good at. Somebody says, "I want to buy what you're making." Then you come to the conclusion, "I could just make more of these and have my whole business based on me making these and someone buying them." But there's this giant gap, this huge chasm in between what it takes to be happy and successful and to be in business and to be creative. It's such a huge, and the expectations are so high and the highs are so high and the lows are like just insane.
Yeah, but we wouldn't change it for anything, right?
Well, but you know what? I think that I'll speak for myself. I think that a lot of the decisions that I've made lately I'm saying the last 10 years has been off the experience I've had trying to be a sculptor in when I was 20 and trying to make it happen and hoping that like I sell enough sculpture then I can make some decisions and I'm not living hand to mouth. You know, the knife making came, the only reason why the knife making worked is because I fucking struggled for 10 years just trying to make ends meet, hustling and, you know, hustling sculpture and yeah, doing all that stuff. I talk to knife makers a lot, and not just on Knife Talk, but I get people in my DMs asking me questions, and it's like almost there's this sense of doom. There's this sense of doom. I'm doing everything this guy's doing. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, but it's not working. It's just not working. I can't get to the next level. And the next level is just kind of like being an adult, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But I mean, well, with that said, I mean, we get messages on Knife Talk. One of the things I hate about Knife Talk is the fact that we've kind of pushed this into the business of knife making. Just because it's like, it would be so nice if we just took away the trappings of the money and we just, you know, talked about the joy of, you know, making knives or just being creative. But it's like, we're stuck in this whole idea of how to make a business of it. And then people want exact answers because they're just dying to be in business, or they're dying to be successful in business.
Successful, that's the key. I mean,
success.
You guys are all full-time makers, I'd say. It is the fact. And so money is an essential thing about that. Yeah. I mean, I oftentimes look with envy on the stories of Mike Quesenberry, who...
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, he's in retirement now, and he only had the knife making, it's not devaluing, but he had the knife making as a hobby anyways, but now it seems like he's really chill about it, and he doesn't have the pressure. I mean, he lives out the kind of knife making without the business end. I didn't talk to him. It's only my assumption.
So Mike Quisenberry is an extraordinary master bladesmith in the ABS, amazing knife maker. Just like, I mean, he's just a mind-blowing, awesome guy. Just couldn't be nicer. And he called me up years ago when he was listening. Everyone, all the big guys used to listen to Knife Talk, and then they got sick of it. I don't know when the bullshit happened. I don't know what happened, but like all the big guys used to be listening, and now they're not listening. So Mike Quisenberry calls me up. Guy's a master bladesman. He wants to talk about all this different stuff, and then he explained to me. He says the key to being a knife maker professionally is to having another job. And he says, I would never want to be a full-time, as they say, a full-time knife maker, because I would lose the joy of it. And he just retired. He was a train engineer. He drove trains. And he had a full-time job. He loved his job. He was I don't know if he loved his job, but he enjoyed his job. And then he said the knife making was like for play money. And it allowed him to make what he wanted and to have the customers that he wanted and be on his own deadlines. And he never lost the joy of the making part of it because, like, he didn't depend on it, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you will necessarily lose the joy, because I don't lose it either. And I'm self-employed since 5 years and made roughly about 500 knives, I think, in that time, some before. So, I mean, as a hobbyist, I would have made probably never 500, you know?
Right.
As a hobbyist maker, probably 100 in my lifetime, something like that.
This actually brings up to a point I wanted to talk about, which was, that's the interesting thing that I was thinking about this, and I wanted to know what you thought about it. So a number of years ago, let's say 3-4 years ago, I get a call from a friend of mine, Josh Smith. Josh Smith now owns Montana Knife Company.
Yes.
He was listening to Knife Talk, and he calls me up, and he said, he sent me a message. He said, hey, do you think we could talk for a second? I just had a couple questions. And he said, I said, of course, yeah, absolutely. And this is before Montana Knife Company. He says, well, you know, he was a lineman. He was on a prairie and, you know, in the middle of Montana waiting for his guys. And he's just like, I'm listening to Knife Talk. I heard you talk about your business partner. And I just wanted to talk. I wanted to know more about your relationship because I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And I'm thinking about the whole this thing. And I explained to him, well, I was a sculptor and I knew that I was terrible at the business end. I was good at executing and figuring out how to make stuff, but I was terrible at the business end of it all, whether or not it's dealing with taxes or dealing with accountants or dealing with lawyers or dealing with, you know, just the business end of it, marketing, all that. And I was telling him all about it. And then he says, yeah, I'm planning on doing this thing. I've been planning on it for a long time, planning on this Montana Knife Company. And I'm just kind of talking to a lot of people who are doing it and stuff like that. So flash forward a year later, he creates Montana Knife Company, picks up his business partner, Brandon, who is a whiz at business. And then Montana Knife Company is like this powerhouse. I mean, extraordinary. The growth of Montana Knife Company is amazing. And it's incredible. And congratulations to him. He's my friend. He's got my number. I talked to him a couple weeks ago when he was coming to the city. I'm very happy for him. The funny thing is a lot of people use him as like this, you know, measuring stick in terms of success and business and like that. And I could easily, I was thought about it. I was just like, am I jealous or envious? Because Fader and I have started, 7-8 years ago, and I've been doing this and slow and steady and stuff like that. And I haven't had the monumental growth Josh has had in Montana Knife Company. And I immediately thought to myself, no, I'm not jealous. I'm not envious. I don't want to compare myself to him. I'm nothing like him. Fader Knives is nothing like him. And I started to think about the idea that I feel as though there's a lot of young makers who start out and they're comparing themselves to other people. And what I came to the conclusion was when I think about the work I've done a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever, I'm so much better now. Slow and steady wins the race. I'm better. The longer it takes, the better I get. And it makes me think that guys like you, especially what you just said, I've been doing it for 5 years. I made 500 knives. I would never have been able to put the reps in to do 500 knives if I was doing it as a hobby. Everything takes a long time. And if you get sad about it, you have to understand the more you do it, the better you get.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, but that ties into another question, because I often question myself regarding the pricing. I mean, once again, but I'm thinking the quality of the work is so much better now, and that's just a fact. I mean, I know my old work, and I occasionally handle it, and then I see it, and it's always small steps. I mean, in every patch you make a small improvement, you notice. We talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
and you make a small improvement, and of course you don't charge for it, but it adds up. It adds up in time. Oftentimes, sometimes it's just equal and the quality just enhances, but at least with me it's true. It sometimes lengthens the time I have to take for one of the knives to finish. And then I end up, you know, it accumulates, and then I end up thinking about, well, how to translate that into pricing. Because for the customer, oftentimes it's changes the customer can't even see. I mean, with heat treatment, for example, or small finishing details, no customer would ever see it. But once you change that as a maker, you can't go back. You're just uncomfortable. You could do it physically, right? But you just don't want to. I mean, at least right. I don't want to, because it's almost like the thing you did before and have been okay with before almost looks like a defect afterwards when you discovered a new process or a higher quality, you know, finish or whatever. So yeah, that's really a part I'm struggling with, how to implement that in my pricing structure or translate it into the price, because
pricing's tough.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's like, it's a lot of it's your direction too. Like, when I think about pricing, I think about a lot of things, and one thing I think of is nothing to do with the knife making or selling stuff. It's there when I was a fabricator at a shop, and we were doing a lot of jobs where we were on union sites. And we were doing the outsides of buildings, and it was like a lot of cladding, a lot of, you know, it wasn't metal work as much as it was being a glazer and stuff like that. And like glazers working with glass and working with extrusions. And it was very mechanical. It wasn't like the metal work you'd think. And I remember talking to my boss, because we'd have to go on this job site, and it was a union, non-union job. And we were working with a lot of union guys. And I hadn't had a lot of experience with working with union guys, and they were perfectly nice to me. It was a strange situation, because, you know, usually that doesn't really work. Union guys won't work on job sites with other union guys, but decisions were made in New York at the same point that it was either you're gonna work or you're not gonna work is really what it came down to. And he would talk to me about just don't get caught up with the union guys, because what a lot of these union guys do is they'll make a job a career. And when they say a job a career, they'll be like, you're going on you're scheduled to go to this job site. It's supposed to take you a certain amount of time. And some of these guys drag their feet to just try to like stay on this job site as long as possible so they get paid more. And he used the expression, don't make a job a career. And I brought that to me with the knife making and the sculpture, really sculpture and knife making, where I was just like looking at the price of a knife, and I was thinking, this, I don't have to squeeze every last dime out of someone for this knife. You know, I need to pay the bills and get moving. So I tend to, when in doubt, I try not to make a job a career. I try not to make every knife, I need to get every nickel I spent on it. Because we get a lot of messages about like, I spent all these hours on it, and I spent all these hours on it. And when it comes down to it, even if you spend a million hours more, or you have 20 hours more than you were supposed to, that doesn't mean you're supposed to get paid more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Although, I mean, I have to admit, I have a very different opinion about customer service than you.
Go ahead. Let's hear it.
I mean, you just, on Knife Talk, I listened to the episode today, and you just mentioned that, or I mean, when this airs, it's a week ago, but you mentioned that you will take care of the customer, that customer service is so important to you, that you will take care of the customer even though you know he's in the wrong. And to some extent, I get what you're saying. I'm just so much of a bitch and fearful that will, snowball into... people will understand that about me and will bother me with all kinds of stupid little things. And, you know, I'm very black and white regarding those things. If the customer made a mistake, I mean, sometimes I do it for free if it's really something some little things where the effort of writing an invoice is higher than repairing the knife, you know, things right. like that, that's no problem.
Yeah, of course.
But if someone gets to me with a big repair or regrinding the complete knife, you know, refurbishing it, that's a lot of hours, and I just can't gift that away. It's just and I'm you know what I'm getting down to is I'm always saying to me every cent I'm gifting the customer in doing that for free is a cent I'm taking out of my children's pocket, and that's really how I, you know,
I understand
how I cope with it, because just it feels bad for me too. I want to take care of the customer, you know. You have that feeling, you feel like a dick. But every time I go into myself and think every cent I'm gifting that customer is a cent I'm taking out of the pockets of my children, and then it's a very clear issue for me. Then I'm it's very easy for me, you know?
I completely understand what you're saying, and I totally appreciate it. I think this is a good conversation because, like, I guess for me, I agree, but I also feel as though I don't have so many people. Actually, before we got on here, we're trying to like send as many newsletters out and trying to push us a little bit farther. This is the first year we've had a lot of inventory available. And so every so often we'll send something, and every so often we'll get a message from someone saying, like, I had it last week or 2 weeks ago, I had a guy who wanted me to resharpen the knife, and I said, no problem, send it in, I'll take care of you. And before we got on, I had a guy who has a history of breaking my knives, has a history of, like, this is a guy who has a history of misusing and not 100% taking responsibility for the things that he does, and I understand this. And he sent a message, and it was very nice and, you know, very thoughtful and stuff like that. But at the same time, it was, oh, I love your knives. I got this crack in this thing, and I'm wondering if... And I just said, send it in. I'll take care of you. And in my mind, I think, ugh, I should charge this guy. But then in my mind, I'm just like, the guy's been buying knives. He's going to buy more knives. If it's an hour or 2 hours, is it worth me kind of throwing myself around? And I personally would rather... do it and hopefully build more of a relationship with this guy, because he's already into me for like 4 or 5 knives. I know I can, you know, I know that, like, he knows that when he calls me, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm just going to take care of it and not make a big production.
No, man,
about it.
And that's
the same
flip
time,
side
I understand what
it.
You're saying.
That's the flip side to it, because you're probably generating money out of that, because you get some future sales from that guy, and that's where it gets, you know, not black and white like I like to see,
right?
But very shades of grayish. Because
I'm all gray. I'm all shades of gray. I really.
Really?
dude, I am 100%. I'm all in the shades of gray. I don't believe I can't live black and white, because it just I can't do it. I am all in the gray.
Oh, it's so tough for me, man.
I
always have to break it down, and then there are very clear solutions for me, you know. But I can't maneuver in the shades of gray. I'm very bad with that.
But in regards to this kind of customer service, if this was happening all the time, like if I was just not making knives that people liked and they were having problems with it, I'd have to reestablish yeah. number one, what I'm doing, and number two, what I'm supposed to be doing. And then that would be a whole different story. But you're talking about one every other month, one little, hey, could you sharpen this? Or, hey, could you take care of that? Or, hey, I broke this. Or, hey, I put in this in the dishwasher. Or for some reason, you know, the handle's falling off. It's like, I mean, you start to nickel and dime yourself, you can drive yourself crazy too.
Yeah, and it's so stupid things too, oftentimes. I mean, stupid, I don't want to, you know, insult the customer. But for example, I've had a guy write me, he bought a knife secondhand, and most likely it was like third or fourth hand.
Right.
It went through a few customers for whatever reason, I don't know. But he asked me about, you know, refurbishing it and thinning it. And that means... you get the package, you have to, you know, you have to open it up, disassemble the whole knife, because I'm taking the handle down when I'm thinning it on the water-cooled belt grinder, so the handle doesn't get stained. Then walking it through the grids, sharpening it again, attaching the handle again. You know, you're talking 2 to 3 hours easy. Yeah. And then shipping, and I'm thinking if it was my knife.
Huh? Let's call it a day's worth of work.
Yeah, it's not that it's not that much, but half a day, let's say. And it gets you out of your regular work as well. Because I mean, maybe you're right with a day. Because it gets you out, you have to make some space for that knife. And then I'm thinking, if that was my knife, if I was the customer, I just lay it flat on the stones. If the edge is too thick for me, because it went through a few customers, all of them sharpening it, the edge gets thick. So it won't perform as if it was when it was new, right? And if I was the customer, I'd just lay it flat on the stones, and then it's very tough for me to justify making that for free. Because I'm thinking, if I was the customer, I wouldn't even ask me. And then,
that's a tall order. Something complete re-grind of a knife. That's a tall order. I'm talking about like you got a crack in the handle because the guy left it. I made a knife for this radio guy, and he went on his Instagram. And he was showing everybody. He left it in the sun. He left it in the sun in the sheath. So the sun dyed part of the knife. I mean, there's like a very clear delineation between the handle of the knife and where it came out of the sheath. He left it in the sun, and it for a long time, for like maybe months. And you know, I told him, I said, send it back. I'll take care of it. He couldn't tell. He didn't know. He didn't know what I was talking about. But I was like, I'm looking at this knife. I'm just like, I can see it on his Instagram. I'm just like, oh my God. You know, you fucking left it in the sun or whatever, just bleached or something. I don't know what happened, but you know, part of me feels the same way. Like I'm not willing to redo. I'm not willing to go crazy, but something small, something, you know, an hour or two here, nothing special. Like this guy with the cracked scales. I'm gonna take a look at it, and I'm prepared to just fix it if, you know, either repair it or, you know, I'll give him new scales.
Yeah.
And just because he's been a good customer of mine. And sometimes I'll get a lot more. The funny thing is in the custom anything game, when you give good customer service that they're not prepared for, especially them knowing you're a one-man shop, it goes a lot farther than you think.
Yeah, and that's true. And I will say, for good customers, I'm not asking questions either. Right. I'm kind of hypocritical in that. But if a guy writes me who isn't actually my customer but bought a knife secondhand, it's super tough for me.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm having customers who bought 7 knives of mine, and that's quite some money. If they encounter a problem, I've done that. Then the Jeff Fader, the Fates no questions asked policy applies for me too.
But there's also like having to decipher people's intentions are hard too. Because a lot of times when people write you in regards to, unless they know you, when people write you with a problem, sometimes they're trying to write it in a way that makes it makes the onus on you to be compelled to fix it, as opposed to, hey, I'm noticing this thing, do you think you could take a look at it, as opposed to, I've had this knife for a long time and it's got this, and they're just like looking for a fight. You have to be able to also decipher how it, you know, read between the lines and read what their intentions are and what they're trying to get across, and you have to try to also kind of quell a potential fire. Because what you don't want is you don't want it to turn into a problem. And the problem is usually just a misunderstanding.
No, I'm with you that you don't want to let it turn into a problem, but I'm very black and white with that too. I'm taking what you're writing me for face value, and I'm playing dumb. And I'm doing that to the extent that I do that even with my wife, because I'm not here to, you know, guess things. Just talk to me. Tell me what you want, and we'll deal with it according to what you're saying to me, but I'm not playing guessing games. And I do that with my customers too. If you write me a kind email and pretend like you just said, it wasn't a big deal, or if you're searching for a fight, I'm answering face value. And if that email is nice and just a stupid question like, could you look at it? I will look at it. It's just, for me, I'm not for those kind of games at all. It's so.
But this is also, this type of dealing with, as a creative person, you're very creative. You're extraordinarily talented craftsman and creative person and executing what you're doing. This is where people shine at. Like, I can make, and it can be anything. It could be making spoons. It could be making, you know, whatever. You are excelling in this one part, but you have to be able to navigate other things that are out of your expertise.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, and I'll say this, this is a hot take, total shot across the bow. And I'm saying this to all you knife makers out there, never take business advice from anyone who says books are closed in their Instagram page. Don't do it. Don't take business advice from anyone who says books are closed in their Instagram page. That is one of the worst business things I can think of in terms of someone who understands how to grow in a business. And Ben, I don't know if you have, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. And I don't know if you have that in your Instagram. So I apologize.
No. I never critically thought about it, but I never wrote it in my Instagram bio either. But when someone asks me about available knives or available work or whatever, I first of all, draw them into my newsletter. That's the first thing I'm doing.
But that's good.
Yeah, that's very good.
You're not saying no right out of the bat.
I owe them.
Right.
And second of all, if I know something is available, I might refer them to my retailers. But other than that, I'm telling them, you know, I'm telling them I don't take orders, but get into my newsletter. And once slots open, then you will hear about it from my newsletter, you know.
That's smart. And the reason why it's smart is because you're not saying no.
Yeah.
When you write books are closed, I've known for years, for 10 years I saw people say, my books are closed. What are the books? Tell me about these fucking books. What are your books? What kind of book are you talking about? Is this a phone book? Is this like some sort of ledger, Christmas tales of the 12th night of whatever that Christmas thing, and Ebenezer Scrooge is opening up his book? What are these fucking giant books you're talking about? People say books are closed, and it's meant to make people think that you're in high demand and you don't have anything. But it's a total flex. But what it's telling people is, I don't want your business. I'm not interested in your business, is what it's telling you. So anybody who gives you business advice with books are closed in their IG, don't take it. They don't understand how to grow. They don't understand how to say. They don't know how to say, all right, how is this company going to keep going? See, the thing is about you, Ben, and you and I are different in the sense of, like, I feel as though my direction at Fader Knives is to be more of a business. My dad was a small business owner. My sisters are small business owners. We want to have my sister had a bookstore. My dad was a winemaker, and he made very approachable wine, and he felt very strongly about, if you like it, it's good wine. If you don't like it, it's not good wine. He was very plain. And I feel there's a very big similarity in terms of our direction, in terms of this business. And I've kind of taken away a lot of the art of it and really try to push it as a business in terms of, I want to grow every year. We have to have a degree of growth, sales growth every year for me to be satisfied. We have goals every year that we try to meet. There's a lot of people, and what you do is you have the discipline in order to make the work, and then you figured out a way to make sure that when you do these newsletters, you have something in place for there to be growth for not only for you, but also for your customer base.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different, but what was always important for me is to have high demand, and so far I've accomplished that. And that ties into what you said about books are closed. As soon as I'm reading that as a customer, I'm moving along.
You're not even going to look.
Books are closed. Why would I look? Whereas if I read, you know, sign up for my newsletter, then I'm signing up if there is a chance to get available knives or get a custom slot at some point, you know, because I'm interested, and then I'll just have to bring the patience with me. That's the only downside with my business model, I guess, because it's not scalable in any ways. But I've come to terms with that. I'm staying alone. It's okay with me. But also from a customer perspective, I mean, I guess that might deter some impatient customers to say, well, I'm not putting up with that. I'm not waiting.
Well, but that's okay. I mean, that's okay, though.
Yeah, it's totally okay for me. I mean, and so far it's going good. I recently sold through Abe from Eating Tools my most expensive knife to date. It was a collab, and it sold before Abe put it up on the site.
Wow!
So I mean, I couldn't be happier with the business side of things. I mean, you know, it could always go better, I guess, but it could go way worse too.
It's of course, and it's interesting because I really appreciate and respect and admire you for creating this demand. I don't have it. Like, I have stuff in stock. I rarely sell out. Like, we sold out the first batch of shop knives we made. We sold out. And then we...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We have some still available, and you know, I don't have the demand that, and I'm fine with it. I'm not upset about it. It's just the way it is, and I have to kind of like get a better understanding. I have to have better understanding of what we're doing. The funny thing is, with Books Are Closed, it's like someone's first impression of you is you saying no.
Yeah.
It's totally crazy. That's
bad.
The first impression they have, the first opportunity they have of seeing you and meeting you and trying to understand you is you saying no. It's crazy. And it's like these guys, everybody listens to each other. They all do the same thing. It's also similar to these guys, everyone who's flipped out when Instagram did this kind of algorithm kerfluffle. It was like the sky's falling. Everyone was like in this barrel roll into this spiral, and their plane was about to crash. And it was this like, you know, I mean, this most insane and dramatic and crazy like hysteria over something that could be fixed. And then those are the same guys who are just, I mean, it's like there's a sense of entitlement with some people that I just cannot get past. I cannot get past the sense of entitlement.
Yeah, it's difficult. But you know what I'm going to do? Since this airs only on Friday, I'm going to look into my, you know, the knife makers I'm following, searching for the guys who have books have closed. And then after this episode airs, I'm looking who of those motherfuckers are actually listening.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's right. That's right. You're the man. All right, guys, listen, if Ben's following you, and he'll know, he's already looked.
I'm stalking you guys.
If you're listening to this now, he's already looked. And if you change it, he's going to know. So now all of a sudden, you just got to put your hands up in the air, and you just got to say, you got me. Officer, you got me.
Better listen
hands
to
up,
us.
Red-handed. Good man. That's why I love having you on, man. You really fucking know what to do. Yeah, that's right. As you're listening to this, know that the research has already been done.
We've screenshotted
already been spying
everything
on you. And you're out. You're red-handed. Red-handed. Don't switch it now. It's weird. You know, I think about entitlement all the time, and a lot of it is because, you know, I get every once in a while, because on Knife Talk, I'm the most, you know, I'm the one who puts myself out there a little bit more than the other two guys. And part of that's because it's radio. I got to keep you listening. And so I have to say some outrageous things every so often. I do get messages of sheer entitlement that always shocks me. And it might be a generational thing. It might be, this sense of urgency in regards to fixing your life. But I find myself every so often getting a message from a person asking me a question, and then I'll answer it, and then the answer wasn't good enough. And that one guy got mad at me. I helped him with something, and then he got mad that I didn't help him on something else. And then he tore me up in the DMs on Knife Talk. And then I explained on Knife Talk without even giving his name out because I didn't want to embarrass him because, you know, mental health is a real thing. And he wrote back, and he still didn't understand, and it was this sense of impulsiveness, and it was this sense of entitlement, and it's like, I'm seeing this now globally with everything, and how social media has made learning this answer, you know, answer, give me the answer now, and give me the exact answer, and it's like, it's exhausting, frankly.
But do you think at this point it might be some trolls just fucking with you?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, because, you know what, I don't really buy into that whole thing. I was talking last week to Chris Powell, and we were talking because he gets a lot of trolls on his
Instagram. Yeah, I've listened to that, yeah.
Oh, dude, he gets a ton of trolls, and people are fucking free. And I don't necessarily believe that trolls are malicious. I believe that they're truly looking for some sort of connection. And I believe so. I think it's similar to like back in the day when, you know, the whole story of like guys, you know, who liked little boys who liked little girls were pulling the pigtails, and it was because they liked them. I think that they're looking for some sort of connection. Most of the time, and I don't necessarily believe that it's completely malicious.
Some guys for sure. I don't know if it's the majority or the minority, but I know for a fact there are some guys who just get a kick out of it. I mean, I've been young and I've grown up with the internet, and I was pretty much a huge dick when I was young on the internet. So coming from the gaming scene and just being an asshole, right?
But how old are you now?
Yeah. 35.
Yeah, but see, but now you have too much to do. See, that's the thing. It's like when you're in it for, as you're a kid and you're in it for the, you know, you're not worried about using social media for money or you're not starting a business. You don't have the time. You'll have the time to fuck around and that's your thing. I understand. But like for people who are kind of like getting, you know, their lives together, yeah. I just find it so wasteful.
No,
to be 100%. Wasting your time. I don't even have time to comment on people's posts.
Negatively, we have to
anything.
Say.
I don't have fucking time to scroll. I am too busy. I don't have time. I see friends of mine who are on. At night I'll go through and I see my friends have been like this, have been like that, they liked everything. And I'm just like, how do you have so much time in your day where you're able to just sit and look at the Instagram? I'm too busy.
Although, no, I will say when, or at least for me, that's true. I mean, when I'm having lunch or I make a break or something, or laying in bed in the evening, yeah. I'm bored, I'm scrolling through. And I mean, not only do I make a point of liking the stuff I actually like just to, you know, support people because, you know, algorithm likes spread and all that. But sometimes, especially with the younger guys or things where I think that's totally crazy nice, I give a comment oftentimes, or I go through that little effort just to support the tiniest little bit. Just, you know, it helps. Every comment helps a little bit get the algorithm going in that sense, I guess. And
I take it back. I do the same thing. The people that I support, my friends, I write things on their posts to be supportive and helpful.
I've seen.
And that I do. That I do.
Yeah, see? You're a good human. Like I am.
I'm a human. I'm a fucking. I tell you what, though. I got a couple of friends of ars who listen to this podcast who on one of my posts, they were giving me all sorts of unhelpful stuff on. I just instead of fighting them on my post, I just erased their comments because it was just like, how can you be in business and not be helpful? How do you be difficult? So my customers are not other knife makers. My customers are trying to get like housewives and guys who cook and cooks and people who are home. And I'm trying to get non-knife maker people. And then knife makers will write some bullshit that it's like completely like weird and super not helpful. And I that's another thing I can never understand. It's like,
I will say I'm fucking around a little bit with other knife makers who I know, you know, Martin Huber, and in stories. And every time I receive a package from him, he draws me a big dick somewhere or a small dick. You know, his size and so on. And then I'll share that in a story and make fun of it. I mean, for one, I genuinely find that funny because I'm a moron. And
yeah. Come on, man. I'm a moron.
No, and
generally because I'm a moron.
Yeah. No,
that will not be the title of this episode, by the way. That will not be a title of this episode. I thought about it, but I'm like, nah, I can't do it to you.
Go ahead.
I can't do it to you. No. Ben, come on. I'm a moron. I don't know if I can do it to you, Ben.
Do it. Do it.
All right. There you go.
No,
there you go.
I don't like making it about me a lot. So right. Not a lot of selfies and all that, but that stuff I just find so compelling. And I never had any complaints about it either. So I don't know. It's just... But regarding the comments, I would never comment like that on posts of eating tools, for example. They're just way too professional. Jeez. And I mean, regarding that, I had a comment recently on one of his pictures of one of his posts about one of my knives. It was a collab with Joshua Prince, and right. One of the suckers wrote that it was Prince's most pretentious work, but Common is worse, or something along those lines.
It was a knife maker wrote that?
No, it was some random guy with a private profile. I don't know, but that was just. I don't know. That tickled me a little. There was other. There have been other bad comments as well. I ignored those. Those didn't bother me. But this one bothered me a little. And then it came to my mind that pretentious was written wrong. Otherwise, I wouldn't have engaged. He ran pretentious with C, and I looked it up because I didn't know either. I will admit it here. He doesn't listen anyway.
Well, you,
that motherfucker.
You do diligence.
and I looked it up. It was written wrong. And then I wrote. Pretentious, written correctly, is what you wanted to say. You're welcome, or something like that, with a hugging smiley, you know? And then he gave me the rundown of his dyslexia and blah, 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 as if I could have known. And I thought, what a victim. I mean, what a stupid idiot.
You know what? That reminds me of... this is a story I wanted to tell... And it happened to me, and it's probably the main reason why I don't attack people online. That particular brought up a story. I never go after people online. Number one is I cannot handle the anticipation of what the response is. It's just I get too tense. I can't do it. It's just too much for me. But when I was younger, I was on the school bus. I must have been in third. I was in the fourth grade or something like that. I was probably like 12 or something. And these three boys who were a little bit older than me got on the bus. This is the public bus. This was not the school bus. Yeah. And they wanted to break my balls, and they just started ripping me on the bus. I'm on the Lexington Avenue bus. I got like probably 15 to 20 more blocks to go. And they're surrounding me, and they're just making fun of me. They're making fun of my mother. They're making fun of everything. They're just, and I'm not, I was never a good put-down artist. I was never good at putting, and the fact remains is when I was younger, I had a terrible stutter, and my dad would, when I would try to kind of defend myself, I started stuttering, and then he would go, and it would make everything worse. So I was never I was never good at face-to-face, on the spot, ball breaking, or you know, insult return or anything like that. So these guys are tearing me up for blocks, and I'm just like, I can't, I'm never gonna, whatever I say, they're gonna just, you know, reverse it on me. I look, and I'm just like, oh god, I got another 10 blocks to go. And this one guy starts, he was quiet the whole time, and he starts going at me, but he's got a stutter. He's got a terrible stutter, and he's just trying to like insult me. and I'm not gonna do an impression of it, but he was like, he was trying to get it out, and he was stuttering and stammering and bad. And I had taken it on the chin on this bus ride for like 10 minutes. 10 minutes, I'm just getting fucking roasted in front of other New Yorkers, other people, like regular people. I'm getting roasted.
Yikes.
And I turned to him, and I'm like, hey, man, listen, I'm getting off in 10 blocks. Can you get it out? Can you get it out? I got 10 blocks to go. You got 10 blocks to blast me. Get it out. Spit it out, my man. You got 10 blocks to go. And they thought it was funny because it was just like, I'm going to take it, but I don't have to take it for 10 blocks. You know, it's like, so I just let him out. And my whole defense was okay, I got you. My brother, you're going to have to speed it up because I'll take it on the chin, but I'm not going to sit here and like wait for it. You know, next thing you know, I get off the bus and I'm actually feeling good because it made him stutter even worse. I didn't like that, but at the same time, I had to defend myself or something.
You
I didn't make
it
fun of his
moment.
Stutter. All I said was, is just like, my brother, you got to help. I got 10 blocks. You get it out. You got 10 blocks to go. Just, I believe in you. Something like that. The next day, I get hauled into the principal's office and the principal says, we've been working. Were you on the 101 bus yesterday afternoon? I was like, yes, I was. Were these boys on that bus with you? Yes, they were. Did you make fun of this kid's stutter? I said, what? He's like, I got a call from this kid's mother. We've been working with this kid for years on his terrible stutter. You've put him back. He went home after you made fun of his stutter. He was so upset. He's not coming into school today. And I was just like, wait a second. And they're fucking lighting me up. We work with this kid after school every day. And we've been trying to get his confidence up. And here you are destroying him. And I said, they were making fun of me on the bus. And they're like, what? I'm like, get the other two guys. They grabbed the other two guys. And I told my story. I'm like, I'm sitting here. And these guys are kicking my teeth in, and the dude, this is your sad kid, he's trying to get me too. What am I supposed to do? Is three against one? And then they brought the two kids in, and then I give the leader of the kids a lot of credit. He goes, yeah, he was giving it to Jeff, and we were giving it to him for like, you know, 15, 20 blocks. He had to say something. The guy was like, yeah, Jeff, you know, Jeff was just defending himself, frankly, and the guy stood up for me. And then, but the crazy part is like that was the. It's very similar to what, and it made me just be very, you know, I don't like to go after people because it's like that was that story was like pivotal because I was just like I felt terrible. I mean, the guy was so upset he couldn't come into school the next day because I destroyed his self-esteem.
Yeah, although I mean, he brought it
that's
up on himself.
That's a good one.
Himself.
Come on, man. That's a good one. That was a good one. I'll just never forget. The best thing I had was, I got 10 blocks, man. You got to get it out.
But they played fair. I mean, that the other guy defended you the end?
He admitted, he says, we were all on the bus. We were killing Jeff. And this other guy, he started in, and Jeff had a, you know, saw an opening and went for it. He had to defend himself too, you know. So it was a crazy, crazy situation. But it totally reminds me of your whole story because it's like that's what happens. People don't want to take responsibility for their actions at all.
Yeah.
And it's as if, go ahead.
No, it was really just me seeing that opening. And it was so nice because, I mean, I told you, I'm taking things for face value, and taking my sentence for face value, it was just very nicely correcting him. I said, you mean pretentious is what you're trying to say. And the hugging emoji, you know? So, yeah, I was very subtly fucking with him,
humiliating him. It's great. No, I mean, the funny thing is, he wasn't able to say, yeah, you got me. He had to say, oh, you're making fun of me because I have dyslexia.
Yeah,
it's
and
shithead. I mean, come on, man.
As if I could have known that was the...
Yeah.
I even comprehended saying something like, yeah, and I have played Smith dyslexia or something like that. Yeah.
Pretending, you could have said, I speak a different language.
Yeah.
This is not my first language, my brother.
That's the other thing. I mean...
I find myself, like, I had this I was talking earlier about this guy who was mad at me, and I don't fight online for free. Like, my whole point is, like, if I'm going to get you, I'm going to get you where I'm getting paid. So I got time to burn. So
I like
I'll this. Always, like, it's the move, man. If I have to have conflict, I'm going to get paid for it. Like, I'm not doing it shit for free. I'm not doing it private, too. I'm not doing it private. I'm not doing it for free. And I'm not entertaining some sort of weird relationship.
Well, that's the smart
move.
I'm going
to bring it here. I'm going to bring it to Knife Talk. And I'm going to let you have, I'll make you anonymous, but I'm going to let you have it. And I let this dude have it. I was also very aware that I had this feeling that he seems impulsive. Like, when you read the things that he writes and you read his explanations, it seems like there's a lot of people who are very impulsive. And I made the point of not only just explaining that I don't want your mental health to be ruined. I understand. It's all good. Let you hear the ground rules. And I just, like, I playfully beat him up. It wasn't the worst, you know, throttling I've ever given. And he wrote back, and he was like, he agreed that I had helped him and I thanked him, but it wasn't enough. Like, he just, there was this inability to take responsibility for your actions and your motives. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I feel as though that there are a lot of people who are incapable of seeing something that they're going to do and think about the ramifications of what they're going to do and say, maybe I should just back off. You know, maybe let's weigh the options of all the things that could happen when I do this. And then you say to yourself, am I willing to go to these levels that may be uncomfortable for me? And, like, here's an example. I think that I've been getting tattooed for 30 years, more than 30 years. I love getting tattooed. I've wanted to get tattooed when I was a kid. When I was a child, I wanted to get tattooed.
Okay.
I used to get fake tattoos when I was very young. I love tattoos. I always wanted to get tattoos. But at the same time, I made some conscious decisions in regards to how far I'm going to go. Like, I know I don't go. And my kid, too. Like, I've, you know, she's gotten a couple tattoos. I'm sure she'll get more. We have a very good, you know, open understanding of where we're going. And I kind of, we have some guidelines and stuff. My opinion has always been, if you want to get a tattoo, figure it out and then think about it. And in 6 months, if you still want it, then you make the decision whether you're going to get it. You got to, like, there has to be some kind of decisions.
Yeah, that's
and
a good approach.
I remember, pardon me?
That's a good approach.
Well, I mean, it's like, if you really want it still after 6 months, then now you can talk. But if you just get impulsive. So I remember probably about, I'd say 15 years ago, I was talking to my guy, and he was telling me that they don't do face tattoos. He was telling me that they don't do face, and he says, I don't do face tattoos, and the reason why I don't do face tattoos is there is a correlation, this was a scientific correlation, between people who have face tattoos and suicide.
Okay.
And there was this, for a long time, there's a lot of people who just won't do certain tattoos, and a lot of it is because the, like, racist stuff or questionable things or face tattoos were a big no-no for a lot of people. And then something started to happen where it became more approachable. I think Mike Tyson kind of ushered it in, as that was shocking when Mike Tyson got his face tattooed.
That tattoo is so bad.
It was so shocking. And it was just like, friends of mine were like, he ain't gonna live another 4 years. He's gonna kill himself. And there was such a correlation behind face tattoos and suicide. And then all of a sudden something started to happen. And now face tattoos are so prevalent among younger people. And I can't help thinking about it. I talked to my tattoo friend. We're the old guys now. He's in his 50s. I'm now 50. And we talk about it and he's just like, I don't know, man. I don't know. But there's this sense of this impulsiveness without the understanding of what's going to happen. If you have tattoos on your face, people are going to judge you to a certain degree. Yeah. And that's just the way it is. However, you no longer have the ability to say, you're not allowed to judge me. If you're putting something on your face and somebody's just like, whoa, that's a fucking strong move, that's what you're going to get. That's society.
I find stuff like that, statistics and all that, super interesting. Just with the statistics proving that those guys suffer from having more suicides amongst them, and I don't know, being impulsive and all that, what entails that. So yeah.
Well, but it's the real thing is you start to copy other people, but there isn't a sense of like understanding of the ramifications of your decisions. Like if you have I knew a guy who was married to this woman that I worked with, and all of a sudden she came to the shop and she was very upset, and we're like, what's the matter? And he goes, my boyfriend got a face tattoo. Or my husband, sure they were married, and he comes in one day and he got the Mike Tyson tattoo on his face. And we were all like, whoa, what the fuck? And he was like, yeah, you know, this, he was a big bodybuilder and he had a lot of tattoos, and he was just like, this coworker said that I was too afraid to do it, so I decided to do it. Well, they were like, what? You don't talk to your wife? You just like go out and get the Mike Tyson? You don't even get an original one, you get the fucking same one, the Mike Tyson one? And we were like, whoa, that is such a strong move. And the crazy part was, 2 weeks later he came in, he got the exact same one on the other side of his face. So he had two Mike Tyson tattoos on either side of his face, like big ones around his eyes. And we're like looking at him like, you're fucking crazy. And we're just like, this guy's going to kill himself. But it was just like, he told us he did it. He felt really good about it. He did it because he kind of did it out of spite. And all I could think of is, yo, I do a lot of things out of spite, but I'm not going to like go into a supermarket and get stared at by kids because I'm terrifying. Like, I don't understand people. There's an entitlement to be accepted for your impulsive nature, and it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, fuck that. I mean, why would I accept you? I mean, get out of my way. You can't demand that from someone else. I mean, I'm not demanding to be accepted either. You're not either. I mean, hey, from foreign people or from people you don't know, how it comes?
But there's certain limits. I think and I'm not trying to get into anything other regards to who can judge who or whatever, but there is this level of, I understand where you're coming from, but you're not allowed to judge me for my actions. And that always is, but in the maker community, the knife making community is different from like the woodworking community. It's different from like the crafting community and the content community. Everyone's looking for a step up. And it's the interesting thing is the question of how they get there and why aren't I doing as well as the next guy? You know, why is this guy successful and I'm not? I'm doing the same thing he's doing. I should be just as successful as I am. I deserve this. Or Instagram is suppressing me and I don't understand it. And there's so many things that I just can't understand. And it might be me being an old guy and me. Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's it. Maybe I'm out of touch. I'm out of touch. And I'm out of touch.
No, I mean, I don't know. I think I'm just judging people for what I would expect someone to judge me for, and I wouldn't expect anyone to accept me, like or I'm not entitled to, so no, I'm how do you say it, projecting. Like
projecting,
my
yeah.
behavior on others, I guess. So I wouldn't expect that from other people's or other people that they have the right to demand acceptance or anything like that. I don't even know what that means, because do you ask for acceptance or how does that look? I don't quite.
There's new wording now. We don't have to get into it, but there's some wording now, like people, the word tolerant, being tolerant is now becoming a word that people, there's a lot of like negative spin on tolerant as if you, you know, it's not you accept the person, but when you tolerate something, it's mean like, I'll tolerate this, and you're at the better half of my judgment. I don't know what the fuck it is.
No, but that's a different thing. I mean, I think if I see someone with face tattoos, I won't judge him, right? Despite me liking it or not, if that's out of the question. I mean, if that's the question, then I'm very tolerant. I won't get in anyone's face about it. I'm not caring about that. But acceptance somehow implies that you're coming to me asking for acceptance, and that's just not how it works in my mind.
I'll tell you an interesting story. When I was at the Center for Mental Arts last, they had a sculptor there, a blacksmith sculptor, and his name was Pete Matilla. And Matilla is incredibly talented. The guy is fucking talented.
Yeah.
And when I met him, when he introduced himself to me, he had on black jeans, he had a black vest on, he had a black jacket on, he had a black fedora on. And he had tattoos all over his face. He had like lines. I'd never seen anything like it. He had these lines that would go across his ear, and then it would go into his face, and then it would bend down. And they were like, it was like line drawings, but around his whole head. And as soon as I saw him, all I could think of is that as an extreme situation, as an extreme thing to do. But I knew who he was by the work that he did. I was like, all right, well, you know, that's it. It's not, none of my business. That's for him. But I mean, it was like, when I first met him, it was shocking, because it was just like, he had tattoos all over his face. And part of me was just like, what kind of person does something like that? But then all of a sudden, as we spoke, as we talked, as we met, as we kind of like had art conversations and this and that and the other thing, and all of a sudden it was just like any preconceived notion I had went away, because it was just like I was accepting him for the things that he was saying and the conversations that we were having. So yeah,
if that's meant by acceptance, then I'm very accepting too. I mean, I won't.
Yeah.
You can do whatever, as long as you don't get into my face about it, in the sense of asking me if that's cooler or something about it. If you ask me, then I might tell you my honest opinion and you might not like it. But as long as we have a conversation and you can, I mean, for all I care, as long as you don't bother me in any kind of sense, as long as you don't get into my sphere. I mean, I might get bothered if you shit your pants next to me. That's something I'm very intolerant about.
That would be, for example, fair. You could judge someone on that.
Okay, yeah.
But the whole Pete Matilla thing was, he wasn't looking for acceptance. He wasn't looking for my, he didn't need my, he wasn't asking me for my opinion, he didn't give a shit. He could give a shit what I thought about him or anything like that. And we created a relationship based on our talking, our conversations, and then the things that we were getting together. But it was different, because he wasn't just like, you know, some fucking, you know, kid who decided to put like sleepy under his eyelid or something like that. It's just like he was who he is, and that's just the way it is.
And
it
that's
was
a,
very
yeah, that, go ahead. That's a healthy approach about it. I mean, yeah, if someone looks like that and then constantly looks for approval, that's unhealthy.
He didn't give a fuck. I would think that he's also probably used to people thinking that he's pretty wild. You know, you're in rural Pennsylvania. He's from Tasmania or something like that. He's got this crazy accent, and he looks like a villain in a movie. And he's a sweet guy, funny guy, smart guy, incredibly intelligent. He's got an eye like you wouldn't believe. And it was a very interesting situation. It was a very interesting conversation, and he was the antidote to what your preconceived notion on people who have face tattoos would be.
Yeah.
Did you have some sort of topic you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about the reels, because I recently heard from a friend that apparently German lawyers go ahead and sue people for businesses or people who make money through Instagram, you know, advertising in any way. That they are going ahead and sue people who have reels with licensed songs in them. And
who's doing the suing?
Some random German lawyers. or lawyers in, you know, who are behind the music firms or however you want to, music companies, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, so lawyers are suing companies who are using reels with music behind them.
Yeah, companies like me or you.
Or me, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I heard from a friend, she told me, and up to 25,000 euros. And that's when I deleted all my reels. I archived them, but I kind of deleted them. I took them out because I was thinking, I was looking into that matter. I couldn't believe it at first because I was thinking, if Instagram provides me with the songs, they have to have the license for that. And that's kind of true, but they are only granting you the license for private people. So on your private account, if you're walking with your dogs or driving around the skateboard with your daughter and you're putting some music in, that's okay. But if you advertise your knives or show anything that can be seen as advertising, to buy stuff and so on, that's very prohibited. And I thought I have to bring it up because, I mean, I'm assuming the same as I didn't know. Many people don't know that.
Number one, if Mick Jagger's lawyers are listening, I'm sorry. It doesn't surprise me. Now, here's what happened. When I first had a business account, I couldn't use, and like Tomer, can't use like normal music, so you're stuck with the non-licensing stuff.
That's the reason why, actually.
Right, and I changed Fader Knives to personal so I could be I could have the music.
Yeah,
this is the first I'm hearing of it, and my immediate thought is, I would imagine we would get a warning.
Nope.
I would imagine I would get a cease and desist. I would imagine I would get a cease and desist. I'm not doing millions of views.
No, it might be true for US laws, but I've heard, I mean, the friend that told me has, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 followers, and she had that happening to a friend of hers, and that actually happened. They sent kind of cease and desist letter in, but with a fine already. It wasn't 25,000 euros, the fine, you know, it was lower, but it was still an amount. I don't know what she said. It was a lot. Way too much that I'm considering paying it for stupid reels.
Go ahead.
No, I just thought I'd bring the topic up. I thought, better inform yourself. I went on, because I didn't believe her either. I thought, yeah, well, I mean, Instagram provides me with the songs. It has to be okay. And then I read into that stuff. And seems like in Germany, lawyers are exploiting those laws right now. Maybe it's easier in the European Union. But I thought I'll make people aware of that's a kind of a problem if you're a company.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I would imagine that there would be, a cease and desist at some point. Like in the United States, you don't normally get sued right out of the bat.
Can that be coupled with a fine?
No, you wouldn't get a fine because it would be a civil, you don't get fines for something civil. I can imagine there would be I'm not a lawyer, but I would just imagine that you usually get like a warning. And then if you don't heed the warning, then you get sued. So that I would imagine. I'm going to keep it in my mind and I'm going to think about it. And none of my reels have gone viral yet. So I'm not too worried about it this minute, but it'll be something that I'll be thinking about in the future. That's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how the American law works in that, but yeah,
usually
I mean,
you get a warning. Usually you'll get a warning, especially, I mean, if the Rolling Stones want to sue, I mean, they're probably suing people with fake, you know, the people that they're suing are non-licensed, non-licensed shirts companies and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So no, I would think that like, the technicality, I would think that the technicality would be
in, I mean, in
worthy
Europe,
of you, like a warning.
in Europe you'd get a warning too, usually, as if in the sense that they are serious about you stopping doing that, you know. Right. But as I understood it and as I read it on the internet afterwards, so she told me, but then I confirmed it with reading several sources. They are kind of exploiting the system in that, because so many people just do it. And I have a lawyer as a friend too. I didn't talk to him about that yet, but he told me in another topic that it's perfectly legal, at least in Austria, to directly sue without any warning. I mean, that's just legally spoken, no problem. But I don't know US law. But I'm just saying, maybe just look it up if you're having a lot of reels with music in it and you're a company, maybe just look into that. I took the reels down, they're just not worth it for me. I mean, I don't play around with those kind of things and those amounts of money. I mean, 25,000 euros, that's just, I mean,
that's insane
for a few songs. I mean,
yeah,
how?
Huh? That's interesting, because I guess I'm gonna think about it and I'll look into it for sure. I mean, that's definitely something that and you know, it makes sense. You know, I know of like Food Network people, and all of a sudden the weird part is like, I don't know if you do TikTok at all.
No.
I fucking hate it. I hate it. I'm so resent the fact that I'm on it, and I'm doing it because I really feel as though I gotta, you know, if I'm gonna do one, I gotta do the other. And
do you do
they dances? What they do is they'll only give you a minute of a song, and I feel as though they're trying to not have to pay licensing, because, you know, the licensing with the songs on Reels goes to Spotify. I think, you know, Spotify it's through Spotify, and then they end up getting paid. Like, people's Reels get used and then their music, they get paid. But TikTok, they just fucking rip a minute. And if your video is longer than a minute, the fucking song stops because they're just like, we're not paying it for this. So I wonder if there's any sort of, I don't know enough about
possibly.
It, frankly.
I don't know either.
Oh, jeez. Well, there you go.
I got scared sufficiently, so I took them down.
Yeah. Well, I think we're small fish. I mean, we're not, you know, I mean, ultimately we're small fish. But at the same time, it's like, I would imagine they're still getting paid, though.
Yeah.
Like, if they're getting paid, for their licensing anyway. Then I don't know if they're allowed to sue us. Like, you're getting paid. If we get a lot of views and plays, they're getting paid anyway.
I mean, in the technicality of things, I think they are. You're not allowed to play music on a commercial event from your Spotify account either. I mean, you're paying for it, but it's for private use. So I'm no lawyer either, but that somehow makes sense. I mean, the Spotify account you're paying for is for one person or maybe two or whatever. But once you're starting to play for 100, 200, 1,000 people, then that's another deal for them. And similar with Reels. I mean, if they get 3,000 views or more, it makes somewhat of, you know, it makes some sense. And if you're advertising for your work, so it's just for commercial use. If you're getting that kind of views on your private account, then that doesn't seem to be a problem for whatever reason, because you're selling nothing. I don't know what the argument is there.
This will in the next year, this will be something. This will definitely, without question, be something. It'll be like when Napster came out and those companies were like getting mad about it. And I cannot wait to hear the bitching and the moaning from the knife making community.
And the lawyers are really exploiting the law. In that sense, not exploiting, but they are looking for guys like us.
Pantera is suing me. I'm getting sued by Oingo Boingo. Oh my God! All I try to do is sell knives, and the Instagram's suppressing me, and now I'm getting lawyers trying to sue me because I wanted to use that Rick Astley song.
No, did I start the bitching in that sense?
No. That's what. Not you didn't start it. You're giving everybody the. This will be our story. Ben Camone, breaking news. That's it. That for 2024, this will be the issue that we complain about, is that lawyers are making us, that we're not allowed to use, name your song. I mean, the Rolling Stones, I'm going to use them while I can. Monkey Man, Jumping Jack Flash, Gimme Shelter, Monkey Man. Those are my three. Those are the three best ones. So, I'm going to use them until they tell me to stop. And then when I stop, you'll know it. I'll say something about it. That's for sure.
But man, I don't get that mindset at all, because at the end of the day, you are advertising their music. And I mean, Rolling Stones are big, don't get me wrong, but there are songs I don't know. And if I'm hearing them on your reels or any reel on the internet and I'm liking it, I'm putting it in my playlist on Spotify, I'm listening to it, and those motherfuckers get paid then. So I don't get the mindset of suing people like you who make free advertising for them, essentially.
I'm not getting sued yet, Ben.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm not getting sued yet, Ben.
I'm holding out. Ben Camone, ladies and gentlemen. He ain't getting sued either. You know why? He's smarter than the rest of us. Go to Instagram and follow his musicless reels. No music, no licensed music on his reels anymore. Ben Camone, Camone Knives, K-O-K-A-M-O-N. My brother, it's always a pleasure. I wish you and your family the happiest of holidays and a successful, prosperous, and healthy new year.
Thanks, man. All the same to you. And yeah, I wish you all the best, man.
Is that all? All right, so I got to sign off. So you going to say something that Arnie would say, or no? You still doing that?
No, this time actually not.
This is it? You finally don't have it? Every time Ben's on, he always ends it with something from Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you got nothing. All right, guys. Listen, next week I have a surprise guest, and then I may take a week or two off, but otherwise, I'm with you. Go to Knife Talk Podcast. Not Knife Talk. Go to Full Blast Podcast. You can go to Knife Talk. We're going to do the All Beef Review pretty soon, so you can get involved with that. But if you want to get involved with the Full Blast Podcast, Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. And God, I'm with you guys. Ben, once again, thank you, my brother. Nothing?
It was lagging right now. I didn't hear you.
All right, I'm gonna say goodbye to you again. You gotta come up with something good, guys. We're gonna see you next week. Ben Camone, thank you so much. It's great to see you.
Thanks, man. Bye.
That's it. You didn't give me anything.
Yeah, thanks, man.
No Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Cocainum.
There you go. I'm on my. All right, guys. See you later.